Welcome to Idle Chatter, brought to you by the Machinery Digest, where steel and soil meet. A weekly podcast by a New Jersey farmer to all farmers and ranchers across this great nation. And yes, there are farms in New Jersey. Regardless of the crop you grow or the livestock you raise, we all have one thing in common. Agriculture runs on passion, sweat, tears, and machinery. And that is why the Machinery Digest exists. A no-nonsense, grease-under-your-fingernails educational website. It was created to provide a transfer of knowledge so that you can maintain, service, and most importantly, understand today's complex farm equipment. My name is Ray Bohax, and I farm too. It is time now to get under the sheet metal. Hello, my friends, and welcome once more to this week's Idle Chatter podcast, coming to you from the Farm Machinery Digest in Hackettstown, New Jersey. And yes, it is raining again in New Jersey, as it is in many parts of the country. So if you listened last week, and hopefully you did, and I believe my show last week was getting to know Rudolph Diesel, that is, and hopefully you enjoyed that, and I told you that my first planting of sweet corn went in, and I true no-tilled that. I didn't touch the soil, and went in very nicely. But we did not have a lot of heat units, so it was. I planted that one. Let me look at the calendar. On the 18th of, I was going to say July, God forbid, 18th of May, and it just started to poke through the ground on Saturday, which was the 25th, when I put my second planting in. When we really haven't, we had one morning that was 38 degrees. We had a lot of mornings that were 45 degrees, and not many heat units. I think one day we only had 5 heat units. So, hey, what are you going to do, right? That's why they call it farming. But some of it did start to poke through the ground. It wasn't Saturday. I planted Saturday. It was Monday and Memorial Day that started to poke through the ground. And that was probably just around 90 heat units in those 9 days. So we were getting, I think one day we got 16 heat units, and the other days were like 9 or 10 or even that. So using the theory of 100 heat units, maybe it will come up today, but it's raining and it's chilly. It's 58 degrees. And it was a low of 48 and a high of 58, so not too much heat today. I think 3 units if you do the math, right? Use the equation. But we'll see what happens. But I did get the second planting in, and I chose to continue. I'm going to do true no-till. I'm not touching the field, and we'll go from there and see what it's all about. I'm really not overly concerned with that. What I'm more concerned with is my weed control, because I do plant a traditional old-fashioned type of corn, and I really don't have much rescue options if the weeds come up. So I was just concerned with my pre-emerge getting into the first eighth of an inch of the soil structure better by tilling it. But other than that, I don't think it's going to make much of a difference. And I think that it will, God willing, work out okay. So we will let you know. And hopefully things are going better on your farm than I've seen on so many farms. And sadly, they had those terrible tornadoes, those twisters out in the Ohio and Indiana. And I heard stories of debris being plowed off the road with snow plows. So that's really not good, and I really didn't even want to look too much into it. So I just want to say, a prayer for those people and those animals that are out there that was in that storm's path. And there's so many things happening today in the world that you could actually become just so mired in negativity and negative things. And I mean, they're real. I'm not the type of person who sticks your head in the sand and says they're not real, but you really have to try to limit your exposure to it, because it really accomplishes nothing. That it basically goes and just get you all, I don't want to say depressed, but just it's sad to see all the things that are flooding out west. And I know up in Canada, in Western Canada, that they're in a terrible, terrible drought. I've seen pictures in Australia of a terrible drought. The poor cattle are dying. It's just, like I say, it's, you know, with the world getting smaller because of all this communication, I'm not, you know, these things happened since the beginning of time, since Christ walked the earth, but we weren't exposed to them. Anything that happened, you know, 5,000 miles away, we weren't exposed to. Back then, if it happened 2 miles away, you probably weren't exposed to it. But today, we just get bombarded with all of these horrific events because of the technology to communicate them, that it does become overwhelming, and it really doesn't serve anyone any good. We have to be concerned for those suffering that, but we can't let it just get us stuck in the mud and so mired in that situation that we don't move forward ourselves. You know, I don't know whether it's an old wives' tale or an urban myth, but there used to be a story back east here, and it basically touches on the point what I just said, is that there was a guy who had a hot dog stand, and it was during the Depression, and he would go out every day and he'd make his hot dogs, and he'd, I don't know whether it was a hot dog wagon or whatever, a little truck back then, or who knows, and he'd make his hot dogs and he'd sell or go out and sell them. At the end of the day, he'd go home and he'd get up the next day and make his hot dogs and sell them. And he was so busy just doing what he needed to do to make a living, making his hot dogs and selling them, that he didn't pay attention to any news. He didn't read any newspapers. There was only radio back then. He didn't listen to the radio. And he was just like typically like a farmer, right? Just going, doing your work, getting out in the field, milking cows, doing crops, whatever you have to do, and just no time for the world. And he was doing well. He was going every day, and he was selling his hot dogs and working hard, and he was making a living. And then one day, someone came to him, and they said to him at his stand, you know, how could you come here every day and sell hot dogs? Don't you know that the stock market fell? Don't you know that the whole world is in a depression? The country's in a depression. People out of work. And he said, no, I didn't know that. And then the next day, the legend goes, that he closed up the stand because he found out that the country is in a depression. And like I said, I'm not laughing. But, you know, we do that to ourselves. Is that he did not know what was going on, so he just did his own thing, and he went about his business, and he was successful. And then once he heard that there was a depression, and this person convinced him that he could never, ever sell any hot dogs because of the state of the economy, then he just closed up the stand. Even though he had business, he closed up the stand because he felt that he couldn't do it. And I think that's so much that's happening today in agriculture. Excuse me, I touched the microphone. I'm not belittling any situation that's out there by no means. And the weather events obviously are completely out of our control, and they're in God's hands. But, you know, market conditions and crop prices and what have you, yes, they are not what they should be. Not denying that again also. But the fact of the matter is that we all need to take a lesson from the hot dog man and do not let the things that the news media tells us or everybody tells us get to such a point where we become paralyzed and we don't run our business and make smart business decisions. We become deer in the headlights and we just freeze up because of that. And I really see that happening, and I think social media is really a bad thing for that. Because everybody's got an opinion, and everybody's entitled to opinion, but I necessarily don't need to hear it or want to hear it. And the thing is that, you know, you get just bombarded with negativity, and then you just want to give up. And, you know, this is true, this is not what I'm going to say next. It's not an urban legend or myth or whatever you want to call it, but, you know, there's something about the human psyche. And it's very simplistic. The mouth says it, the ears hear it, and the brain or the heart believe it. And I've said that before on this show. And I think we're at the point right now where people are just so talking about negatives that even if you don't have a negative situation, you're not flooded out, you don't have a tornado, you're not in a drought situation, you have a product that you're producing that you still get a decent price for, a fair price for, is that you get bombarded with all this negativity, and then you just jump on that bandwagon psychologically that everything is bad and negative. So that is not the case. But so that's my little tip for today. Think about the hot dog man. Let's all go to work and get out in our farms, our ranches, our orchards, do what we got to do. And if we do what we got to do, we know that in the end, no one ever failed by trying. So that is something that I always wanted to, stress through these shows, is that no one ever failed by trying and no one ever failed by doing hard work. So that's something we need to not lose sight of and keep these news cycles. And it's almost like a horse race. Oh, no, there's a deal with China. No, there's no deal with China. Oh, my God, there is. Oh, here he is ahead. It's like hearing a horse race over the radio. It's ridiculous. But anyway, on a different positive note, and to the theme of today's show, is that I'm going to call it Hello Goodbye. And what it's going to be about, what I'm going to talk about, is thinking of selling when you buy a piece of equipment. So you should think of selling as soon as you buy. And that may at first blush seem like you just want to get rid of something, but it's really not. And hopefully as the show unwinds today, and unfolds is probably a better word than unwinds, is that you'll see where I'm coming from with that. And you're on every farm, there's a time when we're going to sell a piece of equipment, and we're going to buy a piece of equipment. We may be buying a new piece of equipment, maybe buying a pre-owned piece of equipment. And what I'm going to talk about is to establish the proper mindset and the proper protocol when we are selling, when we get something and we say hello to it, and keep in mind that eventually we're going to have to say goodbye to it, except if it's the Bohax farm, then we keep everything forever. Once it comes here, forget about it. It never leaves. I got had an old S10, an 83 S10 that's been off the road since 2001, and I just went to the junkyard last month. But anyway, because it became such an eyesore. But we will talk about that. But before we get into hello, goodbye, I want to tell you about the Agro Expo. And the Agro Expo is a great event, and it is being held in Michigan, up by St. John's, Michigan. And if you have nothing on your schedule for August 13th and 14th, the way the weather is, we're going to be planting, right? But 13th and 14th, I want to recommend that you head up to the Agro Expo. You can look them up on the internet. It's theagroexpo.com. And it's a really, it's a technical field day. It's a technical event. It's not a sales event. It's not some of these field days today and have gotten to be almost like county fairs or carnivals. And that's not what this is about. The Agro Expo is about learning. It's about education. It's about technology. It's about getting the most use out of your fertility, out of your soil. And it's the dirt under your fingernails farmers event. So it's a field day that has more than 160 exhibitors there. They're going to have, I believe, 60 different field trials, and there's just so much going on, so more than I could talk about here on this show. So check out the Agro Expo, and I also have, I believe, some listings for hotels there. And it goes without saying that the event is free to the attendees, and it's a wonderful educational event. And if you happen to be up there, hope for one of those days, or I would plan to go for 2 days if you can, so you could get the whole flavor of everything, because they're going to have demonstrations, they're going to have go through test plots, they're going to have some drone flying demonstrations. So I'm rambling on with this because I'm excited about it, and it's really something. It's like going to see the Grand Canyon. You have to go there and see it. But if you're there, also check out the IQ Hub, and you can look that up on the internet also. That's a wonderful education center, and it is at the Agro Liquid offices, but it's there's not really anything to do with agroliquid. It's about fertility, crop fertility. I don't think there's anyone from the least experienced farmer or the consumer to the most experienced yield champion that cannot go to either the Agro Expo or the IQ Hub and come home and say, man, that trip was really worth it. The time I spent there was really worth it. And, you know, as a side to that, I have never, ever gone to any event, be it in the automotive industry, the agricultural industry, the fertility industry, that I did not come home with at least one thing, and usually more than one thing, that I could really apply and sink my teeth into to make my business better. So check that out. It's the Agro Expo. Alrighty. So, you know, as we were saying, or as I was saying and you were listening, right, is that on every farm there's always going to be come a time when you're going to purchase a piece of equipment and or you're going to trade in the piece of equipment or sell the piece of equipment to somebody else. And what needs to happen, in my estimation, is that when you're selling or trading in a piece of equipment, you obviously want to get the most for it. And obviously, the purchaser wants to pay the least for it, so you're diametrically opposed there. And I think that if you follow these steps that I am going to lay out, that you will be able to get the most for your piece of equipment on trade-in or resale, and more importantly, the person that is buying it will be very willing to give you the price that you are asking. And so that is, I want you to have a piece of equipment that's not only going to serve you reliably through its time on your farm. So from the moment that those tires roll off that flatbed truck, whether it's a sprayer, combine, tractor, tillage piece of equipment, what have you, and they touch your soil on your farm soil, I want that piece of equipment to be reliable and to be profitable for you. I want it to be a profit center. I don't want it to be a negative cash flow. Because remember, anything that you're buying, you're not buying, you're investing in. And with an investment, there is an expectation of a return, of more money coming back in than what you put out for it. That is a return on your investment. We talk about ROI, but that is the return. And then when you are selling it, you obviously want to get the most return, and then the new person buying it needs to have a return also. So that is the whole crux of it, is that if you look at it as a return on a return with an investment, not a purchase. A purchase, you expect nothing but a bill in the mail and maybe a feel-good feeling for a day. So what we're going to basically do is I'm going to be bringing you together from all different directions and almost like into a funnel. And that funnel is going to be the pointed message as the show goes on today. But, you know, when you're selling or trading in a machine, and we're going to focus this on engine-operated equipment today. I'm not going to talk really about a planter or a piece of tillage equipment or what have you, but we'll talk about more. But everything I'm saying here applies to, or I'm going to be saying, is going to apply to those pieces of equipment also, but obviously in a different way if it doesn't have an engine. But, you know, when you're selling or trading in something, the model comes into play, the brand and the model, and is always going to come into play. But the more dominant concern is the quality and the hope of reliable service, as I was saying. And the seller needs to be able to instill this confidence in the buyer. And if you could instill this confidence in the buyer, and I'm not saying a phony confidence, but instill this confidence in the buyer by doing certain things through the life of that machine, then you will have a person that will be very, very willing to pay the price for it, and you will have the clear conscience of giving them the best piece of equipment that you possibly can. And the following protocols that I'm going to be bringing together are, you know, they apply to gasoline or diesel, and they apply to almost everything. You'll just have to try to switch it around a little bit. But what you need to do is you need to think of resale, as I was saying, the day you bring the piece of equipment home. And, you know, when it rolls off that trailer, and it makes no difference whether the resale is going to be in 3 years or 30 years, but at one particular point, most likely, it is going to have to leave your farm and move on to another home. So, what the first thing I want you to do, and this is going to be focused upon you buying a brand new machine. And keep in mind that this also applies to your car, your truck, your ATV, UTV, a generator set, an irrigation pump. It makes no difference what it is. All right, so these same tips or protocols are going to apply. So the first thing I want you to do is invest about a dollar. Ready? And get a notebook. And when I say a notebook, I mean an old-fashioned paper notebook with lines on it and the binding. All right? That, when you say notebook, people think of an IBM ThinkPad. And I'm not talking about that. So get an old-fashioned notebook. And your first entry should be the delivery date and time, if applicable, the clock hours or miles from the factory, and the name of the dealer and the cost. Now, this may seem trite, but what it becomes the foundation of the machine's history with you. And the notebook also establishes an intangible. It establishes a sense of pride and ownership that will pay huge dividends when selling. And not only will it pay huge dividends in selling, is that I look at a piece of machinery as a blessing from God. When I'm able to buy something specifically new, and even if it's not new, if it's a pre-owned, we don't say used anymore, but a used machine, I'm not politically correct, right, that I feel that the good Lord has given me the opportunity, the ability, and the funds to be able to invest in that for either as personal use for my car or something, or a washing machine in the house, or a piece of farm equipment. And I honor that. And by getting this notebook, and it's specifically nice with a brand new piece of equipment, because no one else drove it, no one else used it, no, it never touched the soil of any other farm than yours. And you're establishing this history and this sense of pride and ownership. And when you have, just like you could ride by a guy's farm. You could be 500 miles from home on a two-lane road, and you ride by a guy's farm, and you see that the waterways are all mowed, the grass is all nice. He's got a picket fence stand of crop in the field. Everything. It doesn't have to be fancy, but everything is pretty as a picture. You could see the love. You could see the care. You could see the honor that he has given into that place. And you ride by the next place, and there's an old Falcon sitting up on blocks, and the weeds are growing out of the ditch, and everything is busted up, and the mailbox is half on the post. And there's no pride of ownership there. There's no pride that the person has taken in that. And you know if they have no pride, they're not going to take care of it. So subliminally, the idea of you having this notebook is going to establish a pride and ownership to the potential buyer, but it's also going to reestablish your pride to yourself, even if you never sell this machine, reestablish your pride of ownership, because you could take up, open up that notebook and go, wow, look at this, this is the first oil change, this is the day I got it, it had 1.2 hours on when I got it, and that really is, if you're anything like me, that just really is a wonderful, wonderful thing to have. Now, subsequently, you're going to keep records in this notebook for each service or repair, the date, the hour meeting the hour meter or the odometer reading, depending upon the piece of equipment, and what task was performed, and also the brand of parts or lubricants or chemicals that you used. So now you're building a history. You're building a profile for this piece of equipment. You're coming and saying, this is the date I did this service or this repair. These are the parts I use, and these are the fluids or lubricants, if applicable, I use. So now we're building a history with this machine. And you got this in this dollar notebook. All right, and what I like to do is get a notebook for each piece of equipment. So if you have, five different pieces of dedicated equipment in your farm, you have a combine, you have a sprayer, you have two tractors, you have a UTV or something, then you buy each one a notebook for a dollar. And keep it in the farm shop, keep it in your toolbox, keep it on the shelf. And if you, and I would also put a pen in each notebook. You could just clip it in there, hold on with a rubber band, so when you go to write, make an entry, it's not, looking for a pen, this and that, and all this other stuff, and then you never end up doing it. Say, I forgot to make that entry. It doesn't have to be written in the King's English. It doesn't have to have perfect penmanship, but it has to be there. Alrighty? And then also what I want you to do is make a schedule to wash the entire machine and twice a year give it a good wax job. Many get confused. They think, I don't have time to do this. I don't have time to do that, right? I'm not going to do that. Well, many believe that washing is only for aesthetic appeal. But there's a mechanical side to cleanliness, and also there's a mechanical side that goes, not a mechanical, a pride side that goes back to keeping that machine clean and polished. You know, when dust and dirt, and a farm is nothing but dust and dirt, you're in the fields, you most likely live on a dirt road or or unpaved road, or at one particular point, the road going to your farm is dusty. And when dust and dirt are left in place for a long time on any machine, it actually works into the moving parts and acts as an abrasive. And that creates excessive wear and premature failure. I mean, you don't have to detail this combine, you know, as if we're going into a show. But scheduled cleaning is just as important. Scheduled cleaning and waxing is just as important as oil changes. And once you get that into your mindset, you know, unwash the engine, keep the engine clean. Not only by keeping the engine clean do you have less fire hazard or less risk, but you're able to not have that dirt work into things, as I said, but also is that you're able to be very quickly see if something is leaking, if there's a problem, what have you, if there's any seepage someplace. But keeping it all clean, and if you will be surprised if you invest less than $100 in a good orbital buffer. I happen to use one from Griot's Garage, and if you go on my podcast hosting site, I listed it as one of the Christmas gift suggestions. I did a special podcast back then, a special show, but I use an orbital buffer, and this orbital buffer makes quick work of doing a great job polishing large equipment, and it works great in the cars also, but it just makes very quick work of it, and it puts on a nice even coat of wax, and it comes off, goes on and comes off very quickly. And like I said, is that you could spend as much detail as you want, but we're not going to win a show. If you want to make it show quality, that's great, but you want to take not only support the paint and the aesthetics of it, but the mechanical side of it. You know, keep in mind that paint on a piece of equipment is there for two reasons. Number one, it's there for aesthetics, but number two, it's also to prevent rust and corrosion. So if you keep that wax, the water beads off of it, the dust rolls off easier, it's all good. Alrighty? Plus, you could have the pride of saying, this unit has so many hours on it, this truck, this car has so many miles on it, somebody comes to look at it, the first thing they see is that it looks very, very young. And it looks very young because you took care of it. And the same thing, you know, applies to the interior of the piece of equipment. But you're also on the side to this, by using a good wax, you know, and make sure that you use one with a high level of ultraviolet UV protection. And so not only will the unit look good, but it will protect it from rust and deterioration from the sun. So in many parts of the country, the UV load is very, very high. And if you have a piece of equipment that's not shedded or spends a lot of hours out in the sun, is that UV will definitely start to deteriorate and eat away at things. You know, the next thing I want to bring up to you is with most modern engines and equipment, it's always best to use factory parts and filters and, you know, and the original lubricants and hydraulic oil. You know, they may be a few dollars more, but you are buying what the formulations and the elements of the part that the engineers wanted that machine to have. So don't try to second guess everything. Don't try to say, I can buy this, it's cheaper, blah, 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 whatever, same thing, right? You know, hey, I always tell people, yeah, is crop protection the same? Is a group 5 herbicide the same thing as a group 15? Is corn hybrids or soybean hybrids the same? No, they're not. So, you know, keep that in mind that you want to use the factory parts, and that's going to be recorded in your notebook. So the person could come and look at it and say, hey man, look at this. This guy always used John Deere filters. He used high train oil. He used this, that, everything. This thing has been taken care of meticulously. I don't know, it's a matter of my tongue today. Maybe it's a barometer. But anyway, but you know, machinery is also very complex, and there's a variety of materials used in the seals, the gaskets, the bearings, and other components. You know, why do you want to gamble with having an issue down the road because you wanted to use some off-brand product or some product that is not really specified for that machine. You know, on pesticides and products, we say, you know, go by the label. But we don't go by the label for machinery, right? We say we can put on whatever we want, the same is the same. You know, and also keep in mind that if the machine has an extended warranty that could be transferred to the second owner, your notebook and the use of the factory products will be of interest to that buyer, because he's going to see the value in that, and it's also to the warranty provider that they are covering and warrantying a machine that was properly taken care of and serviced with the proper parts. Now, you could say, hey, this thing has got an extended warranty. I used all factory parts. Everything is good. The new buyer comes. He takes the notebook with him. It's his ownership. He's got his receipts. He's got everything documented. God forbid he has a problem. That warranty is going to be valid because of what you have done. And really, at this particular point, what did you do that caused you? Maybe you spent a couple of more dollars on parts and oils and oil and filter, a dollar for a notebook and a little bit of wax. So you didn't have a major investment in it. All right. And another important thing that I want you to do is get into the habit, and we've kind of discussed this before on the show, but it's something that, you know, I can't beat into you enough, but get into the habit of doing fluid analysis as preventive maintenance, as part of your preventive maintenance program. You know, analyze the engine oil, the coolant, the hydraulic oil, transmission fluid, all right, on a yearly or semi-annually basis, depending upon how much the machine gets used. So this will establish an internal history of the key components. And it'll show that, hey, this is how many hours, there's no elemental metals in it, there's no fuel in it, there's no oil in the oil, that the coolant is all good, what have you. And this further substantiates the claim that you are selling for top dollar or trading in for top dollar an excellent, excellent machine. You know, and every laboratory provides a printed copy for your files, and you know, testing is probably around $30 a sample, so it's not a lot of money. And if you were to analyze four samples, you'd have probably a yearly investment of $120. Plus, you know, the fluid analysis is an excellent predictor of potential problems, and you know, that can help you even in when you're owning it with a potential warranty claim. If, let's say, God forbid, something happens, and an engine wipes out a bearing, a main bearing, you could say, hey, look, here is my procedure, here's my notebook, here is, I put your oil in it, I change it on schedule, I use your filter, I was doing fluid analysis, and for the first 1,000 hours, everything was fine, and now at the next, at 1,100 hours, I'm starting to see some bearing material in the oil, and my oil pressure is lower. You know, that's something that they cannot fight with. They cannot fight with that because you have all the documentation. You know, and what you want to do is you want to look for, you'll look at your equipment through these eyes. What you always want to do is look at your equipment, even with yours and you bought it. Look at it as a potential buyer. And when you go to buy something, you know, you look at it with different eyes. If, hey, a friend of mine's got a car he wants to sell. So, man, I always like that car. When you want to sell, let me know, right? And then he comes and tells me, hey, Ray, I'm selling my car. Oh, man, I'm really interested in that. Let me come over and look at it. When I'm considering buying it, I'm looking at it through different eyes than just him pulling down the driveway onto the farm here and saying, man, that thing looks good, Gene. You know, but now, oh, there's a nick there. Or, geez, I don't like that, or I don't like this. So you're more particular. So the thing is that when you look at your piece of equipment, and you bought it home new, and if you think of the day that you're going to have to transfer, it's like a father, you know, having a daughter and saying, one day, I'm going to, this little girl is going to be handed over to another man to be his responsibility. Or you have a son, and you say, one day, this young man is going to leave, and he's going to take a bride, and he's going to take, and I'm going to teach him to take care of that bride, and I'm going to be proud to hand him over to be a husband to some girl. And the same thing is with a piece of equipment. You want to be able to have this relationship, this care, this history with it, that you are completely intimate with it, and that you are one day going to hand over something that you are proud of and also will be able to give you the greatest return on your initial investment in that piece of equipment. That the percentage that it costs, the percentage of the total cost that you invested, and it will be very little because you're getting so much on the resale or the trade-in. Alrighty, so now I'm going to ask you something. Let's say, hypothetically, You're going to look at a piece of equipment, right? It's clean and routinely waxed. Everything about the unit from the day one that the person, the farmer, got is recorded in a notebook, along with fluid analysis reports. All service and repair parts are from the factory and are performed on schedule. Now, be honest with me. Wouldn't this be a machine that you would that would sell quickly at a price, and you'd be willing to pay a price above average for it? You know, Dave Mowitz does on the Successful Farming Show and in the Successful Farming Magazine does all these auction reports. Imagine going to an auction. I mean, and usually a piece of equipment like this could probably not find its way to an auction, but that doesn't mean anything. It's, it could, potentially can. There could be a death in the family. People just want to get rid of it. They don't want to see, you know, they don't want to see their husbands or this their father's combine going down the road 2 miles away. They want to just make it go out of town. Imagine going to an auction, and all the auction reports I've seen, I've never had anybody come and say, look, here's a notebook that comes with this combine. Here's a notebook that comes with this tractor, and this is everything from day one, the day it was purchased, the history of it, what they paid for it, what dealer they got it from, every oil change, the type of oil, the brand, everything in here. I mean, that auction price would go through the roof. And the machine is waxed, and it's taken care of. You could see the love in it, and that's a machine that you feel very confident in buying. It doesn't mean something can't break, but the thing is that you want to be able to give that person, or if you're buying that machine, you want to be able to buy that and bring that home, because even if you're buying a used piece of equipment, a pre-owned piece of equipment, that is an investment from your farm. You want a return on that investment. You don't want it to. You want it to be profitable to you, and you're going to have the best chances of it being profitable to you by buying it from someone who took care of it to the level that I am talking about. And the sad part about it is that this is very simple. It's very easy, but 99% of the people won't do it. But, you know, as an aside, you know, other than, you know, implementing these simple procedures, but this will make the machine more reliable while it's on your farm. And that's what the Farm Machinery Digest is all about. It is about you not investing and spending money unnecessarily on repairs, on failures, on fuel consumption, what have you. I always wanted you, and that was the impetus for this, I want you to spend your money where it's going to make you a return on your investment in your production facility, not where you're blowing motors up on everything because you lack of maintenance or ignorance. And ignorance is lots of times, it's just ignorant. It's just ignorance or not recognizing what the potential problem is or why that needs to be addressed. So now we have this here. So to recap quickly, we're going to get a notebook. We're going to record everything. We're going to wax the machine. We're going to do fluid samples. We're going to use the factory parts. We're going to do the maintenance on schedule, and we are going to record everything in this $1 notebook that's going to be titled for that particular piece of equipment. So now let's say, all right, that's fine. That's one side of the aisle. That side of the aisle is we bought a brand new piece of equipment. We brought it to our farm, and this is how it's going to be taken care of, and everything is going to be recorded with the eye on getting the most return on our investment when we go to sell it, and also having the benefit of reliable economical performance while it's on our farm, so that we could do what we want to do, farm, not lay underneath the tractor or the combine in the field in the mud. All right. So now we're going to switch gears, and we want to make you an informed buyer when you are purchasing a pre-owned machine. And like I said in the beginning, I'll recap. I don't care whether this is a car, truck, or a combine, or an irrigation motor. It basically is all the same. So when you're in the market for a pre-owned piece of equipment, you know, you should begin by speaking with the seller and glean as much of the history as possible. All right, hopefully this guy listened to this podcast and he's got a notebook for you, but most likely he won't, all right? So once you get through that preliminary, it's like the first date stuff. Hey, you know, you like this, I like that. Hey, so you get through that first, that stuff before the first date with a girl, all right? So if you're still interested, you know, then take time spend some time and look everything over. Don't just give it a cursory glance. As I said on the show before, I mean, people buy this stuff at auction. They buy it through the internet. So many people are so, you know, and I'm going to say the word, they're lazy. They're lazy. I mean, it's hard to consider a farmer lazy because we work so hard. But, you know, everybody's lazy in a certain way. Some people are mentally lazy. They don't want to read. They just want to look at movies. Some people are physically lazy. Some people put a lot of time and effort into one aspect of their farm and neglect something else. But, you know, don't be lazy. You're spending a lot of money on this piece of equipment. You better go look at it because it's yours once you bring it home. So just don't give it a cursory glance, you know, and if there are any maintenance records that you could get from them, who be it the auctioneer, be it the farmer who has it, the dealership, what have you, whoever's selling it, or get them and study them, maybe ask them if the machine is interested at that particular point, then you know, you want to really study. If you're not interested at that particular point, you see a red flag, then obviously, you know, you walk away, give them the papers back and say no thank you. But, you know, there's simple things that you could do. You know, like we were saying about you ride by somebody's farm, the waterways are mowed, the mailbox isn't cockeyed, and some kid busted with a baseball bat and dented it. You know, check to see simple things. Check to see if the grease cups are full and the hydraulic line covers are in place. If all the grease cups are busted out and rotted, or they're completely empty, or the hydraulic line plugs are missing, or they look like they've never been in place, the hydraulic line caps, you know, often areas that seem so inconsequential, such as these, they speak the loudest about the owner's mindset for maintenance. And really what you're buying at that particular point, you're not buying brand loyalty. You're buying owner loyalty to that machine. Because I don't care whether you're a red guy, a green guy, a blue guy, whatever, and you know, Chevy guy, Ford guy. I mean, I'm a Ford guy, right? But I'd rather buy a Chevy pickup truck used from somebody that took care of it, like I said, with that notebook and did everything, instead of a Ford pickup truck from a guy that the grease caps are all busted up on it and the valve covers are leaking or what have you. So with that particular point, you're really buying not the brand, you're not buying the color, you're buying the previous owner. And if you look at it that way, and yes, you could still say, well, I'm John Deere, so I'm going to look for a John Deere piece of equipment that the guy took care of, like the hot rod farmer said. That's fine also. But keep in mind that, you know, it's more important. You are buying the previous owner. You're not really buying that machine. And then you'll look for other signs. Look at fluid leaks on the engine and other areas on a large diesel. You'll check around the crankcase ventilation tube and the area around there for excessive oil fumes. Tells you if the rings are shot or the cylinders are glazed over. You know, it's a very strong indicator that you'll pull out the air filter and check to see what it looks like. You know, is it filthy, dirty? It hasn't been changed or blown out for 5 years. And look, you know, also what brand is used. You know, if it's extremely dirty or an off-brand air filter or oil filter on that piece of equipment, or an off-brand battery or something like that, but specifically the filtration, hydraulic filters, fuel filters, oil filters, air filters, then you know, that's going to give a mindset that this guy was looking to nickel and dime this machine, that he was looking to save $10 or $15 on something. You know, another thing to do is, you're going to say I'm crazy, but you're trying to establish you're almost like an attorney going into a trial in the court. You're trying to establish not only motive, but the personality of the who's on trial, you know. And what you want to do is you want to establish the mindset of the previous owner. And something as simplistic as this, check the tire pressure on the machine. Because that's another telltale sign of his owner's thought process. You know, somebody who's worried about soil compaction, worried about taking care of his machinery, he'll be fastidious. A fastidious owner will maintain the proper tire pressure, not only for wear, but to limit soil compaction. You know, the scriptures tell us, if you can't be trusted with a little, you can't be trusted with a lot. If you can't trust the guy to maintain the tire pressure, that he didn't give a damn about his soil compaction or the wear on the tires or what have you. You think he was going to care so much about the oil change or the antifreeze change or the valve lash adjustment, which could be really an issue if the guy let the valves go for too long and they'll start to burn the valve at the seat and start to pound the rocker arm against the stem of the valve. The guy doesn't even check the tire pressure. He ain't going to check that. So You know, pull all the dipsticks, you know, and inspect the fluid. Smell it. Your nose is a wonderful indicator of things. Smell a fluid. Look at the color. Take it and rub it between your fingers. I mean, these are all preliminary steps. This takes 5 minutes to do. All right? I mean, this is not where you're going crazy. And I like to use it and say, hey, I'm not going to start ripping the air filter off or ripping this off. I like to look at the easy stuff. Pick the low-hanging fruit first. You know, if it passes muster at that particular point, then move to something more complex. Right? You know, remove the engine oil filler cap and, you know, check for sludge. That means a lack of oil changes, or I use cheap oil with a lousy additive package. You know, and if any white substance is present, that's not good. You know, there's either a coolant leak into the oil or a non-functioning crankcase breather or an engine that never really got the temperature. And not getting the temperature is the last case, the last possibility. But if you see a lot of white sludge in there, you know, those are not good signs, and they should be warning signs for you. You know, start the engine and listen for any strange sounds. How does it run cold? You know, I did a show a couple of weeks back about diesel fuel in the reaction zone. You know, how does it start? Is it hard starting even in the warmer weather? That's probably an indication that some of the glow plugs are shot and burned out. It's only starting on one or two cylinders. Or if there's an intake air heater, that's not working. You know, and also the fact that it matters if it has excessive cranking, and it could also be that the rings are shot. It's not building enough compression to build heat into the cylinder for that diesel fuel to combust. And the same thing with a gasoline engine. How does it start cold? I mean, I'm kind of focusing on diesel here, but the same thing, you know, you want to pay attention to it. See how it responds. You know, and if it's a hydrostatic or an automatic transmission, see how it goes in gear. If it's a manual transmission, you know, play with the clutch, put it in gear, you move the hydraulics up and down. You know, operate everything. Listen, feel. Does it feel? Is the hydraulic system? You go into, let's say it has a loader on. Do you use it to feed cattle? Right? You know, when you pull a lever to raise the lower, well, there's a talking. Is it moaning? Right? If it's moaning, that's usually a sign of cavitation in the pump, and historically, the either has very poor quality hydraulic fluid, or has a lot of moisture in it, all right, or is possibly low and it's becoming aerated. So pay attention to this. You know what it's supposed to be like. Just open your eyes and look, and open your ears and listen. You know, then drive the unit, see how it responds. You know, and then if you are satisfied to this particular point, then make an investment in fluid testing. If you even have to give the guy a deposit, make an investment in fluid testing. You buy an extraction pump from most test labs, and they'd probably give it to you if with the promise of doing a lot of analysis. You use an extraction pump and you pull a sample from the radiator, the engine oil, transmission, hydraulic fluid. You know, the only caveat being, and we discussed this before in the show a while back, is that the fluid has to have some use on it for the tests to be valid. So if you say to the guy, hey, when was the last time you changed your oil? When was the last time you changed your hydraulic fluid? When was the last time you changed your coolant? And if it's got more than 40 or 50 hours on it, then it would be valid. All right? Or even if you want to push it for 100 hours. But, you know, then you could glean a lot by that. And if the seller, you know, doesn't want you to pull a sample from there and have it checked, you're not asking them to pay for it. You're going to spend $120, $130 to check these fluids. You know, then I would just walk away. Because there's a reason why he's asking you not to look at that fluid through it. And it's like you want to buy a farm, and you say to the guy, I want to take a soil sample. I want to look for compaction. I want to take a soil test, see what this, you know, I want to do grid testing throughout this whole farm before I buy. No, you can't take those samples out here. Go take a shovel, put the dirt in your hand, see how it feels. Looks good, right? You're not going to buy that farm because you're buying a pig in a poke. You know, and then specifically on a diesel with a wet cylinder liner, the coolant test is extremely important. You know, the laboratory will include an elemental analysis, and that's going to show whether there's any iron in there, which would be indicative of cylinder liner cavitation erosion, and then or also possibly electrolysis, but less likely. But if you have a cylinder line that's starting to erode, I mean, that engine's going to put coolant into that cylinder, and you're going to throw a rod through the block. So if you start to see that erosion, elemental analysis in the coolant, then you know that that there's a very good possibility that liner is eroding. It's not leaking yet, but you don't want that piece of equipment unless you get $30,000 off of what you want to pay for it so you could change the engine in it. You know, but so many times, you know, guys can spend $100,000, $200,000, $300,000, whatever the number be, $10,000 for a piece of equipment, and he's so afraid to spend $100 on fluid analysis to protect his investment. I mean, it's crazy. It's like a guy who says, well, I don't want to dig a root pit because I'm gonna ruin, you know, 20 stalks of corn. The 20 stalks of corn are worth about $2. But he doesn't want to be able to dig a root pit because he doesn't want to knock, you know, 20 stalks of corn down. Same thing. I mean, you're going to spend all this money for a piece of equipment. You're afraid to spend $100 to analyze something at that particular point? That makes no sense. That's penny-wise and dollar-foolish. And, you know, you would be surprised once you start to look at things the way I'm telling you to, but people could do to a piece of equipment in a few hundred hours or in a few thousand miles with a road vehicle. Amazing. Amazing what they could do to it. You couldn't write the stories what they could do, how they could wreck it, you know? And so if you do this, then you will be, if you follow this procedure on both ends of the scale, in closing for today, when you buy the piece of equipment, you start to document everything in the notebook, you take care of it properly, then you have that at when it comes time to sell, and you could stand fast for your price, and you don't care what the average auction price is, but this machine is going to get a premium, a huge premium, because of all the things that you have written in that notebook and all the things that you have done. And then on the other side of the aisle, whether you are buying a piece of used equipment, then what you will basically do is you'll be able to buy this piece of equipment with the highest level of confidence. None of us could predict the future. And as sadly as we used to say in the car business, babies die. You could buy a new piece of equipment. You could go in the field with it, it's a brand new tractor, the first time I throw a connecting rod through the block. The likelihood of that happening is very unlikely, but there is a possibility. You could do all this testing and buy a piece of used equipment and then have a problem with it. All right, but the fact of the matter is that if you look at it, the probability of you having a problem with something by checking all these things on a used purchase, on a pre-owned purchase, you analyzed the fluids, you've visually looked at everything, you were able to quantify whether the person was a careful, a caring owner, or an uncaring owner. And I'm not saying that, you know, hey, if it passes the fluid test, passes muster another way, then the guy was lousy with the tire pressure. That's not a deal breaker to me. But the thing is that you want to build up to a crescendo. You want to build up and say, okay, he took care of this, didn't take care of this, and then you can make a decision or use that as a negotiation point. But keep in mind, it was, you know, as President Ronald Reagan used to say, that, you know, when you're investing, he didn't say a piece of equipment, but his famous words were, trust but verify. You know, the markets, the weather, all of the things that happen in the world that ultimately land on our plate as farmers are enough ambiguity. We don't need to have the ambiguity of buying a piece of equipment that we did not perform our due diligence on. And this due diligence that I'm talking about really is not much of an effort. I mean, it's not much of an effort at all, and it's a minimal expense doing fluid analysis. And then, you know, on the flip side of that, as I say, that when you're blessed to be able to get that new piece of equipment and bring that new piece of equipment home, and you document everything like that, I mean, that is really, you know, that's something. I mean, believe me, you'll enjoy it yourself, because you'll look back one day, you'll grab that notebook, and you'll be able to tell a story, say, wow, look when we bought this machine, look what this happened, and, you know, take some pictures if you want and throw it in. That's more for you than for the person who's buying it, but that documentation is going to give you a sense of pride, it's going to give you a sense of accomplishment. And as I said in the beginning of this show today, think of that hot dog guy. You know, if you're blessed, you know, and let me just, before I close and go into the special delivery section, you know, I get so frustrated with everything, and you can probably hear it in my voice, is because, you know, this negativity does no one any good. And, you know, back during the recession of 10 years ago, I was deeply vested in the car industry, writing and what have you, and technical writing and analysis and consulting. And back in like prior to the recession, 2008, 2009, whatever it was, all right, the auto industry was selling about 17 million cars in the United States. And then I think in 2009 to 2010, that number dropped in half. We sold about 8 or 9 million cars in the United States, and everybody was fixating on, oh my God, the news media, the talking heads of the news, car sales are half what they were, everybody's screaming, right? I looked at it the other way. There's still 9 million people who had the wherewithal to make an investment in a new car. Granted, 5 years before that, there were 17 million people that made an investment in a new car, but the way they spoke about it was like no one was buying a new car. You might as well close General Motors, Ford, and Chrysler, put a match to it, shut the lights off the last guy, that no one was buying anything, and I see the same thing that's happening today in agriculture, and I like to say I'm not, I'm coming full circle and closing where I began, but I'm not saying that the problems aren't real, the weather conditions aren't real. I'm not saying that. But the way they act is like no one made any money selling crop. Nobody's buying a new tractor. Nobody's buying a new combine. Nobody's buying a pickup truck. Nobody's buying any seeds. Nobody's buying any crop protection. And the fact of the matter is that is not the case. And has it changed? Of course it's changed, but everything is cyclical. But the fact of the matter is that I want you to be not only an efficient farmer, and when I say farm, I mean everybody in agriculture, because you're feeding the world, and there's probably not a more noble career than being a doctor, in my estimation. Then you're feeding the world, and you're doing what God says to feed his sheep. And the thing basically is that I want you to be profitable. I want you to make money. I want you to have a wonderful life for your family. I want you to have a wonderful future. That doesn't mean that everything is going to be hunky-dory the whole time in your life and farming. Nothing is ever hunky-dory. But I don't want you to be the hot dog guy. I want you to be able to get up in the morning, make your hot dogs, go to your stand, and sell them. I want you to be able to do that. I want you to get into your farm shop, get on your equipment, have it be profitable. Nothing that I will ever tell you on the show is going to make you money. And I always say, and I always use the tagline, it's not what you make, it is what you keep. And I am going to have you keep, by education, as far as your machinery is concerned, much more of what you make. And that's more important than making a lot, is keeping more. And that's volumetric efficiency like in an engine. So, once again, I've yelled at you, but know that it is tough love. It's because I want you to be successful. So now we're going to go to our special delivery section, and that's brought to you by Harvey Firestone, a company founded, brought to you by Harvey, sorry, by Firestone, not Harvey Firestone, he's gone, but it's a company that's founded by Harvey Firestone. See, I get all revved up, and then I don't even know, then I get all anxious here. Company was founded by a fourth-generation farmer from Columbiana, Ohio. Your Harvey dreamed of putting rubber tires on farm tractors, and his innovative mindset is the core of Firestone Ag today, and lives on with their 23-degree tread bar and AD2 technology. The soil is the lifeblood of your farm. Trust it only to Firestone. Your soil is an investment. When you buy that farm, you rent that land, you're investing in that soil. And you need to be able to think that way. And you need to be able to think of what is riding on that soil. Because sadly, just because the tires are round, hard, and black, or the tracks are black, they're not all the same. Alrighty, so now I have a quick letter here from Shane Meyer. And he contacted me through the Farm Machinery Digest website. And he says, good afternoon. I hope you had a wonderful and relaxing long weekend provided to us by our amazing brave and willingness of sacrifice by our military personnel. I think I messed it up a little bit. But anyway, but it is a beautiful introduction. And yes, Mr. Meyer, I do feel 100% with you. Thank you for taking the time to respond to my inquiry about aftermarket air filters for my equipment. As I stated, I am looking for a cheaper option for air filters in my Magnum 340. We also run John Deere equipment, but the Magnum is by far the most costly. Thank you in advance for your time and response. So, what I wanted to explain to you, the short message is that when you buy an aftermarket air filter, they're telling you that the air filter fits and it does some level of filtration. It doesn't tell you what the pressure drop is across that medium, how much of a percentage of of foreign material that filter will hold, how the flow rate will drop off as that filter starts to get dirty or ages and becomes a flow restriction, and what level of dirt particles does it catch, how is its fitment, just because it goes into the air filter housing, it may not be 100% a tight seal that the factory wanted, and you may actually have some unfiltered air getting past it. What is the composition of the media? And as I said before, then again, what size in microns does that filter catch? And all of these other things come into play. And the thing that you need to understand, Mr. Meyer, is that there, and not just Mr. Meyer, and I certainly respect the fact that if you are under the impression, like windshield washer fluid, that it's the same, which in that case it is. It is the same regardless of what brand you buy. It's blue windshield washer fluid. That an air filter and other parts on the engine are not going to be the same. Now keep in mind that any dirt that gets through that air filter, all right, is going to get into that engine oil and be an abrasive throughout that engine and across the cylinder wall. But I think what Mr. Meyer is basically addressing here is that I had said that by using a cheap air filter, you have the potential to truly stress the seal on the turbocharger on a piece of on an engine that has equipped with a turbocharger, gasoline or diesel. And that's because the flow rate of that filter is not the same, and then the pressure differential, which they call a depression or a low pressure area, gets formed. Maybe not when that filter is new. It may form 50 hours out, 100 hours out, what have you. Or maybe when it's new, it's a flow restriction. Unless you put it on a flow bench, you would not know the flow potential of that filter. And then that filter, that flow restriction, causes a low pressure area around the seal on the compressor side of the turbocharger, and over time, not in 5 minutes, that seal will become violated and the turbocharger will start to pass oil through there into the engine and into the intercooler, and then also at one particular point that seal will completely fail, and you will also have the potential with that failed seal of introducing dirt there and then wiping out that bearing. And once that bearing starts to get some flop in it, then you have a collision of either the compressor wheel or the turbine wheel on the shaft, and then that turbocharger is junk. It has the potential of putting a piece of metal through that engine. So Mr. Meyer was kind enough to give me his phone number, so I am going to give him a call, as I would anyone who contacts me at Farm Machinery, Hot Rod Farmer at FarmMachineryDigest.com, and then go over this in a little bit more detail and be able to have a dialogue with him instead of a monologue. But really, the things that you cannot, just because the filter has a media in it and it fits and everything, does not mean that's not really what you need to look at. Alrighty, so I will, if anybody has any questions, that please feel free to contact me. Listen, thank you so much for listening. I greatly appreciate it. I wish you all a blessed, blessed day, a blessed week, and may God bless America and her farmers. You take care, and I will catch you next week in the Hot Rod Farmer Farm Shop.